we're going to start with our presenter, Mr. Neil Fried, from the state of Alaska, economist with the state of Alaska. From what I've read, he has been with the state for over 30 years. Is that right, Mr. Fried? Oh, wow. A very conservative number. Well, good. So we want to hear what you have to say. I'm not going to talk a lot. So please come up here and get started.
Actually, I've been an economist since statehood. You believe that? I can lie for you the rest of the 45 minutes and tell you stuff like that? Come on. No, I have been an economist since 1978. If you want to make that calculation, it's really easy. Very, very long time. And I've been sort of covering the Valley's economy for almost that entire period. So I don't live here. I live in Anchorage. But I have been writing about the Valley for, 35 or 40 years. I'm going to talk about the Valley's economy in general. I'm not going to talk about Meadow Lake's economy. I don't have that kind of data. You know, if you have questions while I'm presenting, please feel free to interrupt me. I like a sort of a rude audience. I'm a little nervous, but if you have questions while I'm talking, just ask. I mean, let's not wait till the end, because I know most of those questions are likely to be forgotten. So, and everyone else is probably interested in what you have to say. And if you ask me enough questions, I'll just eliminate PowerPoint slides, which might be a good thing. So that might, see, he's already got a question. I'm done, yes. Why I'm here? Because she asked me to come here and speak. And I very rarely say no. I love doing this. This is, if I wasn't still doing this, I would have quit at least 10 years ago. But I really do like doing this. And I come to the Valley a lot to make presentations about your economy. And it's really easy to come here because usually I have pretty good news to deliver, unlike other places where I go to speak. So it's, in that sense, it's an easier job here than somewhere else. Did you have a question? I love this. I've never had this many questions before I even got started, other than telling you how old I was. Yes. Because I'm really, my part of the state, even though I do cover the whole state at times by default, but specifically, my job description says that my concentration is Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. So that's the reason. And really, when you think about the two economies now, it's really one economy, whether you like it or not. There's this artificial boundary called, the municipality of Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. But from a broad standpoint, they're really two very closely linked economies. And in the old days when I started talking about this, you could kind of ignore the Matsu Valley because it was a much smaller part of the entire economy and the entire population. But that's not true anymore. We have 300,000, you have 100,000. That's a quarter of this region. In fact, when you look at data that the federal government produces, sometimes you have to be really careful, because sometimes their data says Anchorage or Anchorage Metro. They are including the Matsu Valley in that data, because they, from 10,000 feet high, they see it as one economy, and it makes a certain amount of sense. I just wish they were more specific. When I'm talking about Anchorage or I'm talking to Matsu, I am talking about the two places. And most of what I'm going to talk about today is the Valley, but I have to talk a little bit about Anchorage because those two economies are very closely linked, and populations as well. Very, very closely linked. Any other questions? This is great. I can give half my presentation before I even show my first slide. Yes. Okay. I knew you were going to say that. Nah. But who knows? I mean, who knows what we'll look like in 50 years? And it's kind of fun to speculate because I won't be alive anymore, so I can say anything I want. That's the cool thing about long-distance forecasts is you can say sort of whatever you want. You have to be very careful. But who knows? That is a possibility. Yes. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. His question was, and it's a very good question, when you hit 100,000 plus, does it trigger, you know, federal funds or other kinds of designations? And I don't know the answer to that question. You'd have to ask the borough manager or someone in borough government. I don't know that. But I wouldn't be surprised. That's one of the reasons why more data is produced for the Mattsu Valley than a lot of places, because it does have 100,000 plus. So it does trigger some things. I'm just not sure about that part of it. Yes. I am 63 years old. Yeah. Oh, okay. And I have, you know, I've been doing this since I was 22 years old. I've been here, I've served under, and I'm not a political, because if you ask me political questions, I will not answer them, because I am not in the position. I provide and produce objective economic data. I do not suggest public policy or anything like that. That's not, so if you want to ask me whether I believe in the PFD or not, I am not going to tell you, even though I might have an opinion. But I don't want to get fired, and that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to produce objective data. But I have served over every governor in the state but one. And I did meet him once when I was a student in Fairbanks. And that was, the only one was Egan. Every other governor I have been working, they've been my ultimate boss. Okay, this is the Mattsu Valley since statehood. This is employment. And the only remarkable thing about it is it's just so dramatic. And I'm not even lying here with statistics, which I do sometimes, because I'm starting at zero. We're starting from zero. I don't know why this guy's coming in right now. The guy's coming in there over there, because he's just heard me a couple weeks ago. But nothing's changed in a couple weeks in your economy, by the way. But you can just see it's just been basically very, very rapid growth during all that time with that little blip. And you know, it didn't feel like a blip. How many of you were here in the 80s? It didn't feel like a blip, did it? 1987 didn't feel like a blip. But when you look at it from a historical standpoint, it was just a little temporary blip. And look at how fast we recovered from that and how the valley has basically grown uninterruptedly since then. And the other big difference between yours, and if I had the same graph for Anchorage or for the state, the steepness of that curve would be way flatter for the state or for Anchorage. Look very different. But that's just employment. And that's for employment that exists here in the Mattsu Valley. This is employment growth each year. In other words, in 2016, the Mattsu Valley grew, added 500 additional jobs in the valley. Or in 2015, you added 1,500. Or in 2012, you added 3,400 new jobs that year. That's all it means. Remarkably, in 2017, it's not surprising, the Mattsu Valley lost 84 jobs. And that sounds really dramatic, doesn't it? It's basically flat. I'm really surprised. I expected the Mattsu Valley to decline much more dramatically than it did. Remember, the recession in this state began in 2016. And let me see if I have hopefully the next slide. Let's look at Anchorage. This is what happened in Anchorage in 2016. We lost 3,500 jobs. You lost none. You actually gained jobs that year. Usually they clap when they hear that. And then in 2017, we lost almost 2,300 jobs in Anchorage. And if you were doing it statewide, it'd be twice as many as that. And you lost 84. And we're still losing jobs today in Anchorage and statewide, although it's slowed down. And the preliminary data for the first half of 2018 for the Valley is, doesn't look like you're losing jobs anymore. So you basically, the jobs in the Matsu Valley basically skipped the recession. That doesn't mean everyone in the Valley skipped the recession, and we'll talk about that, but it's remarkable how well your labor force did. Do you have a question? Well, there are no high-paying oil jobs in the Matsu Valley. So it was really a mixture, but it's such a small number. Well, here's the next slide. This is the number of jobs that I have it here. I don't know why I was even guessing. This is the number of jobs you were gaining and losing last year. Remember, it looks really dramatic, but remember, the total is 84, which is very, very little. And you can see social assistance lost 100, eating and drinking lost 38, state government lost 84, but then others gained jobs. Healthcare grew. Healthcare just keeps growing. Why? It should be evident in this room. Not everybody. I've spent more on healthcare this last year than I have the previous rest of my life as I turn 63. I won't tell you why, but yes. I don't know. It was nothing remarkable in 2012. It was not a I know that looks dramatic, but if you look at even earlier years, it was even more dramatic than that. It's a good question, but what happened? Anyone remember what happened in 2000? I don't think anything really dramatic, other than you were growing much faster than the rest of the state.
So how is this representing the people, since we are a bedroom community?
Right.
And a lot of us work in town.
Right.
Does this represent the job loss?
This represents the job losses and gains that physically exist right here in the Matsu Valley. We're going to talk about the jobs that the Matsu Valley residents have elsewhere also, because you have to. So, you know, it's a real mixed bag. Retail lost a lot, and that's the biggest loser statewide. We closed three Sam's stores, et cetera, but they're fighting the internet as well. But I can tell you, your losses last year were incredibly moderate. I was pretty amazed. If you had asked me for a forecast in 2015, I would have predicted much larger job losses in the Matsu Valley. I would have been wrong. Okay, here's where Matsu residents work. In other words, 55% of all Matsu residents work here in the Matsu borough, okay? And let me put a little caveat on this. We do not have data for federal employees or the uniformed military. It's because we don't get their Social Security numbers. They won't give them to us, or we can't get them. And we have the PFD. That's how we cross-check, and that's how we call a resident. So these numbers are a little conservative because we know that a significant number of Matsu employees work for the federal government in Anchorage. We also know a significant number of military folks live here but work on J-Bear. But these proportions are still pretty good. So 30% of Matsu residents live in Anchorage. Another 7% live on the slope. In other words, about 45% of Matsu residents work somewhere else in the state. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. They live here, but they work in Anchorage or elsewhere in the state. In other words, in a sense, the Matsu borough kind of exports labor or it exports housing. It depends on how you want to look at it. There, you know, your payroll in the Valley is close to $1 billion that is spent here, that's paid out by employers in the Matsu Valley. About $280 million in payroll is earned by that little 7% of the number of Valley residents that work on the slope. So you can see that even though that's a relatively small percent, it's huge bang, huge. And that 30% earns more in Anchorage and payroll than the whole 55%. Yes. That's correct. And the Matsubara is actually one of the few places in the state that imports money. Almost everywhere else exports money. Most of them are exporting into the lower 48. Anchorage is exporting into the valley. You can imagine what Bristol Bay does. Hardly any of their income stays in Bristol Bay. So yes, you are one, a third of all earned income in the valley comes from somewhere else. So your model is way different than almost anywhere else in Alaska. Yes?
55%, is that an increase? What's the line on that?
The line on that is flat as a pancake. So, and that's what's amazing, is in the 1990s, that percent was, the total percent, 55, is about the same. The difference is that it's a smaller percent going to Anchorage, and it's a bigger percent going to the slope. And we'll look at that. And that's why I thought when they started having big layoffs on the North Slope that you would feel it more than you apparently have. That's what surprised me. But we have some other interesting data on that as well. We already looked at that one. And this is why I thought the Valley would feel it more. This is employment in Prudhoe Bay, or basically the North Slope oil industrial complex, okay? All employment. It peaked at 13,500 in March of 2015, which was the largest number of people ever working on the slope in our history. Largest. Well, you can see it dropped a lot. It got to about 8,600. We lost 5,000 jobs. That's why we had a recession. 5,000 jobs just there. And I would have thought that 7% of Valley residents that work on the slope, that would have impacted you more than it apparently did. I mean, I'm sure it had an impact. I suspect you have friends, and maybe some of you in this audience lost your jobs, because a lot of people did in the oil patch during those years. The good news is those numbers are not declining anymore. They're actually beginning to slowly recover. This gives you a number of people that were working on the slope that were Matsu residents. It peaked at 3,600. That's a lot of people. 3,600 individuals it peaked at, Matsu residents worked on the slope. It dropped off. We don't have 2017 yet. That data comes slowly, but very significant workforce. I mean, look at that. In 2005, between that and 14, it nearly tripled. And maybe that's what happened in 2012, you were asking me. They all just realized that we're living here and they were gonna spend all their dough. I don't know, that's a lie, but why not? Good story. Here's, you know, this is the good news on the slope and in Alaska's oil industry, and why I think it's beginning to recover, other than employment, is, you know, prices have recovered much nicely. They're making good dough up there right now. It's a profitable place again. You know, we just read this 2 weeks ago, you know, in the paper. There have been all kinds of good news stories about what's going on the slope. These are just some other really significant stories on the slope. So we're sort of getting past that right now. Here's one of the most interesting parts of it, I think, is, you know, Alaska's unemployment rate didn't go up that much with this recession. They all say we have the highest unemployment rate in the country. You're gonna hear that a lot in the next 6 months, and that's true. But that was true 10 years ago. That was true 9 years ago. The average national Alaska's unemployment rate for the last 10 years was 7.2%. Last month it was 6.9. Our unemployment's no higher than it normally is. Why is our unemployment almost always high? You should all know this as Valley residents. Seasonal. We are the most seasonal state in the United States of America. But here's one of the interesting things. A lot of people assumed that a lot of those oil industry workers left Alaska when they lost their jobs. That was a good assumption. Well, that's apparently not what happened. And that's why data can be really important. We looked at people that were residents. These are just residents that were working in the oil patch in 2015, and then we looked at them again at 2017. 60% of the people that were working in the Alaskans that were working in oil patch in 2015 were still working in the oil patch in 2017. Another 12% were working in Alaska in a different industry. Another 7 or 8% were still here, weren't working, but were still living in Alaska. And less than, I think it was 7% actually left the state. So that theory that most people in the oil patch that lost their jobs left is just simply completely wrong. And that's true for construction, it's true for state government as well, two other industries that lost a fair number of jobs. Pretty interesting stuff, actually. Here's the Mattsu Burroughs unemployment rate. Here's the Anchorage's unemployment rate. The states would be somewhere in between. You always have a higher unemployment rate than Anchorage because you're more seasonal. And the other reason probably is because a lot of the people, as you've seen, that work, that live here in the valley, work somewhere else and often in seasonal type jobs. So you're gonna have a higher unemployment rate. And your rate has come up a little bit. With the recession. Here's the number of building permits. You know, everyone was really paranoid in 2015 and 16 when we started moving into recession that we were gonna see the bust again and the economy was gonna go like it did in the 80s. In fact, I was asked to present at a presentation that they wanted to originally title, "Should I Sell My House Now?" And I go, I don't wanna go there. I don't want to present there, but I have no choice. But they did change the title, so it wasn't very scary. But there are a lot of reasons that did not happen. In fact, in most recessions, housing markets don't crash. They just happened to crash in the 80s. I mean, our boom and bust, because so much of our boom was tied to housing. This last one wasn't. We didn't have a boom prior to our recession. The other thing is we just didn't build many new houses. And that's particularly true statewide, but even in the Mattsu Valley. Look at that. I mean, in 2005, what happened in 2005? I don't know. Just like you don't know. It was nothing special, but you built 2,000 new housing units. And you only built, and you're way over 100,000 now. Not way. Now I'm exaggerating to ingratiate myself. But now you're at over 100,000. And you only built 1,000 units last year. Now, that's pretty good. You still built, what percent of all new housing last year were built in the Mattsu Valley in the state? Remember, you represent about 18% of the state's population. Did you hear me present before? 50% of all new houses built last year were built here in the Mattsu Valley. Yes. You've been beating out Anchorage year in and year out for many years. Last year, I think Anchorage built 400. We're coming in worse this year. Maybe we built 500, I'm not sure. And we built a lot more condos than you did. These are housing units. So in other words, if you do build a duplex, they're counted as two, a fourplex, four, single families, one. But this is another reason why you didn't have that bust in the housing market either. Okay, here you can see, that's where it is. Anchorage has, you know, 27, we have about 42% of the state's population, only built 27% of new housing. You can see, you have 14% of the state's population, and so I exaggerated there. Let's move on. This is one thing that has changed. And if some of you are landlords, you probably noticed this in the last couple of years. The residential housing rental market vacancy rates have increased some. They were very tight for a very, very long time. But all over the state, we've basically seen some increase in vacancies for rental housing. Here in the Mattsu Valley, as well as Anchorage. Anchorage is quite similar to this in other parts of the state as well. Yes. Most of it, I think, has to do is generally speaking, the state has been losing population. Now, the Valley has not. So what's probably happened in the Valley is, yes, you've built enough new housing, not just senior housing, but housing in general, that maybe was a little faster than your population growth, and as a result, your vacancy rates did come up. Or it's possible that some of those people, well, no, that wouldn't make sense, because your population grew, unlike anywhere else in the state. And we'll talk about that. A lot of multifamily. But you have, you do, but it's a lot less than we have, but which makes sense. But are you talking about the fourplex thing? Yes. And this is the other remarkable thing, is single-family home sales in the Matsu Valley has not, and this is true statewide, this is not just a Valley thing, has not changed very much from year to year, even though we're in a quote-unquote recession. And you can see, and even in 18, this year is looking very, for the first half of this year, looking very similar to last year. Kind of amazing. And another reason why this recession hasn't hit the state as hard is, one, is because of the demographic change in our population. Back in the 80s, it was really hard to find someone with gray hair in the state. You remember, you'd get off the plane in Seattle and you'll go, wow, there, old people exist. That's not true anymore. We all know that. It's the fastest growing segment of our population. They're more stable. Fair number are retired, so they're not going to lose their jobs. Income comes in. There are more multi-generational families. It's created a more stable population than we did have in the 80s when all those baby boomers came up. And then a lot of them, when things got tough, a lot of them were still fairly young. They just left. They weren't here very long, their tenure. Much more footloose. Yes.
The tidal wave of baby boomers.
Yep. I'm one of them. Oh yeah, I mean that's a big. Why do you think healthcare was the fastest growing sector of the Matsu Borough's economy last year, and the year before that, and the year before that? And that's true statewide. That's not just a Valley. I don't think it's mushrooming. Now it's interesting if you look at the older population, which even requires more healthcare. That may be. I don't know. Ours is growing faster. We have the fastest growing senior population in the United States. Yeah, Alaska does, but we are still never going to get close to what the percent is elsewhere in the country. We still are the second youngest state in the United States. But this is what gives the Matsu Valley a huge advantage. One of the big selling points of the Valley, you all know this, is the cost of housing. Whatever you look at, it's generally, this is single family homes, about 100,000 difference between Anchorage and the Matsu Valley. Now, when we build the bridge to Kenai, you're gonna have some competition. When that's gonna happen? Maybe 50 years from now. Okay. And this is, I just put this together today. This is the percent advantage you have over Anchorage. In other words, that's 100% right there, the red line. And you can see that percentage hasn't changed much in 10 years. You know, it runs about a 40% advantage in the cost of a single family home in the Matsu Valley compared to Anchorage. I'm really kind of surprised that that has not grown a lot. Now, what the heck happened in the early 90s? I have no idea. You know, this is another thing that's kept our economy from, you know, we have a more diverse economy than we think. Oil caused the recession and oil revenues. The bus was very different. I don't know why I'm showing this, but this is stable. And I think this is one of the things that's going to help us come out of the recession is the fact that military spending is starting to increase dramatically. Not here, but in the interior. You know, the F-35s, Clear Air Force Base, Delta. Now, if we come to peace with North Korea, maybe they'll close all those silos, I don't know. Because every time he used to shoot a rocket, we'd build a new silo. But he hasn't done it in a while. But so it'll be interesting. And then, of course, they just announced that 120 million or 30 million runway at J-Bear that I think is going to start next year. This is another sector that's helping us come out of this recession is the visitor industry. It just keeps on growing. With the national economy doing as well as it's doing, you know, you probably noticed there were more visitors up here than probably we've ever seen in our in the state's history. And, you know, the Valley's income picture is pretty good. This is household income. In other words, half the households in the Valley earn less than this, and half earn more. And it looks pretty darn good. Even if you can, you know, look at the national average, even if you adjust it for the cost of living, it's pretty good. And Alaska has either the first or second most evenly distributed income. So, you know, our income numbers still look pretty decent. This is population, and this is Anchorage. No. Ours fell slightly by 0.5% last year. But look what happens to yours. It just keeps on growing. You made 100,000 in 2016, and you really pissed off Fairbanks, because Fairbanks used to be over 100,000. They fell below 100,000, and you went above 100,000. And we told them it's because you stole all their population, because they didn't want it. They hate Anchorage, of course. We wanted to hate you too, but no. But it's funny. You are the only other place now that has over 100,000, and you keep on growing. And the way it works is that there were 1,400 births in 2017 in the Valley. There were 582 deaths. Both of those numbers are growing. No, this is the Valley. I don't know. I think I'm just trying. Yeah, it's a dumb title. I think what I'm trying to say is here Anchorage is losing population and you're gaining population. So these are your numbers. Bad title. Diplomatically, it's a huge. No, I won't go there. But you had 1,400 births, 582 deaths. So you had a plus increase of 750. Part of your population grew because of that. We call it natural increase. And then you had a gain of 1,600 people. In other words, 1,600 more people came to the Valley than left. So maybe 1,000 people left the Valley and 1,600 moved. No, let's say 2,600 people moved to the Valley and 1,000 left, so you gained 1,600 that year. You had a net increase. And you add those two together and you get that overall gain. And that's what makes you unique. Anchorage is gaining by births. The state is. In fact, everyone thinks rural Alaska is emptying out. That's total baloney. Rural Alaska actually is growing faster right now than the rest of the state, most of the state, because of natural increase, not migration. You are the only part of the state that's gaining for two reasons. One's natural increase and more people moving here than out. You can see this is Anchorage. This is net migration, the number of people moving out versus the number of people moving out. In other words, in 2017, through migration, we lost almost 4,000 people, and we've been losing them since 2010. And some of those losses are coming to the Matsu Valley. In fact, here's the gains that the Matsu Valley made each one of these years. In other words, last year, you grew by 1,600. The previous year, you grew by 2,500. You can see that's how many additional residents were in the Valley each one of these individual years. Yes? Yeah, someone made that up. You could just divide 1,600 into whatever the average number is and come up with it. So my guess is that's probably a little high, but it's probably not that far off. I mean, they're not all families, some single people. And you have to remember that some of this gain is also through natural increase. You know, people being born. And more people are born than die. Yes. No. No, they're just... It's our demographics. You know, we have far more people being born, and that's usually the case. I mean, when it's the other way around, we start running into some trouble. I mean, there's a reason why the mushy mortician calls himself that. And that's very good advertising, because he knows that business is growing. But so is health, you know, so is birthing going on, too. But it's really just a demographic breakout of our population. You have more people that in that age group that are giving birth to children than people that are dying. And that's true all over the state. 4.41, so that's a little high. Because your family size is not 4.1. But that's real simple math that, you know, is problematic, yes. An average household is probably about 2.6, right? I mean, some households are 1 and some are 5, but so, okay. And this is the population, the net migration. Let's see. Yes, this is, in other words, you gained 1,600 last year overall. That's the number of people you gained from people moving here versus moving out. Just gives you an idea. Just remember, everywhere else in the state is experiencing negative numbers here, not positive numbers. You have one of the only school districts that's growing. Here's the actual numbers for Anchorage versus the Valley. In other words, what this is saying is, believe it or not, some people from the Matsu Valley do move to Anchorage. I know you don't believe that, but it's true. And in 2017, 1,800 people moved from the Valley to Anchorage. But 3,100 people moved from Anchorage to the Valley. So you gain a lot every one of those years. You almost got double last year. Does it make sense? Okay. This you might not be able to read, but this is your areas. And of course, here's Meadow Lakes. You've grown by 16% since 2010. The overall Matsu Borough has grown by 17%. So Meadow Lakes grew about the same as the Matsu Borough. The state grew by 4%. Anchorage grew by 2%. You grew by 16%. And this is your total population in red. 8,751. Those are the boundaries that the borough uses. They're very random. They're not political boundaries. But you can see the fastest growing areas, Fishhook and Gateway and Kinnick Fairview. The red numbers are just absolute numbers. And you can see, it's pretty amazing. The total state's population between 2010 and 2017 grew by 27,000, and the valleys grew by 15. So more than half of the state's growth since 2010 grew here, even though you only represent 14% of the state's population. I know I'm throwing way too many numbers around here. I'm getting close to the end here. This is sort of an interesting one. What this is saying is back in 1990, if you combine the Matsu and Anchorage together, the Matsu represented 14% of that Anchorage Matsu area. Now you represent over a quarter. So you're becoming a much bigger slice of the pie, which isn't surprising. This is another industry that keeps growing. And there's a lot of it here in the valley. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I've written two articles about this. And it does quite well, and it's quite surprising. In fact, beer consumption has declined in Alaska, just like it has everywhere else. But that's big beer consumption, the Millers and the Buds of the world. That consumption has actually declined, but this consumption of craft beer has increased during that same period of time. That's why some of those big breweries like spending ridiculous amounts of money for some of these small breweries. Hundreds of millions of dollars for these things that are worth, well, I won't say it, but it's ridiculous. But it's funny. because they're worried. Coffee consumption, that just keeps on going up too. You know, that's just, you know, I got to write about this one as well. You know, we're we're one of the biggest coffee consuming places in the country. You know, not surprising. You know, who are the biggest coffee consumers in the world? Finland and Sweden. Well, we're on the same, is it latitude? I don't know, but we're up there. I always, you know, I like to remind Seattle of this. Pardon? You know, the ice cream myth that we are the biggest consumers of ice cream, I have not been able to find any real evidence that that was ever true. And I don't believe it. Although, there is a ice cream maker in Anchorage. What are they called? But it's the ice cream's made here by Wild Scoops. And last week, I saw people waiting in line a half a block long for Alaska-made ice cream. It was fascinating. So the ice cream myth, I think it is a myth, but because I've really dug the sea, because I've heard that too. I've heard that story as well. But man, I just do not see a lot of people here in the winter walking around eating ice cream. I just, you know, I know they might be in home in the dark. You know, it's something you do want to eat in the dark just while you're watching TV, which we do a lot in the wintertime. Marijuana. Now, I wanted to write the article on that, but my boss took it from me. And that one just keeps on growing, too. And we actually had to estimate the employment, which is in that lower graph of how many, and that graph is old now, how many are pleading. The other graph here is the taxes that the state's collecting. And you can see that increased again in July of this year. That kind of surprised me that it's kept on going up, but it's pretty dramatic. I mean, these numbers. And maybe that will be a peak with all the tourists. I mean, it's you know, there's now marijuana tourism and beer tourism and all kinds of things. And lastly is this. I call it the pickup index. And this is the number of pickups registered in the Mat-Su borough. And it declined last year. You are failures. It actually fell a little bit last year. Now, that's true, it fell almost everywhere. So I don't know what quite happened there, but it fell just a little bit. It's not, yes, there's a theory. This is DMV data. So this is the number of registrations. For older people? Yeah, but then why didn't it happen every one of those years? Did it start happening in 15? Oh, that's interesting. You're ruining my story. But that's a good, I'm glad you brought that up. Maybe everyone else I've been talking to just thinks he's full of it and don't tell me. I'm glad you told me. And maybe that is the explanation, but the number of cars did fall, fell even harder than this. In fact, I just wrote an article in Alaska Economic Trends, and I'm almost done here. Let's see, where is it? I've written quite long articles, if anyone's interested, on the Mat-Su borough's economy right here. This is a monthly publication, and I wrote one about the auto industry this last month, and I looked up pickups. I think we have the third highest percent of pickups in the United States. And the other interesting one is we also are the third oldest car or automobile fleet in the United States. We're big beat, and in fact, Uber gave an exception to the rule that in the lower 48, your car has to be 5 years or newer. In Alaska, it can be 10 years and newer. I haven't seen a lot of pickup Ubers. There must be some. I haven't seen any yet, but it is kind of interesting and kind of fascinating. And here's one other little tidbit about, which has nothing to do with anything, but in Bristol Bay, there are actually more registered pickups than there are humans. And I think, and that's registered. So if I lived in Bristol Bay, I'm not sure I'd register mine either. But of course, that's because they're so seasonal up there that a lot of people, their population just changes dramatically from summer to winter. I'm done. Are there any other questions? Yes. Yeah, manufacturing is only declining. Our biggest manufacturing sector is what? Pardon? Beer? No. Pot? No. It's seafood processing. And we don't think of it that way, but it is by a long shot. And mining is growing as well, again, especially mining exploration. New sectors like high tech, I really have not seen big inroads in that. Are service sectors widening? Yes. No, go ahead. It's on the internet. Just type in Alaska Economic Trends and you can subscribe to electronic copies of it and they'll send it to you. Yes. We don't keep really good statistics on that, but my guess it hasn't changed very much. We actually have a smaller self-employed population in Alaska than the country does as a whole. The Valley has a bigger self-employed population above average for the state, above average for, above Anchorage. One of the biggest group of self-employed in Alaska are fishers, are fish harvesters. Or the sexist term, fishermen. That is one of the biggest group of self-employed. And think about it, they all are sort of individual, well, there are farmers, basically. They're all individual businesses. And that industry, some years does really well, some don't. Some years it does very poorly. In part, Bristol Bay had an incredibly great year this year. Cook Inlet wasn't very good at all, yes. Yes, yes. And we'll see what happens. I mean, that's still, they're still looking at it. You know, they're doing some prospecting. They want some subsidies for that. We'll see what happens with rare earth. No. Well, we do. I mean, there is interest and growing interest. There's been some prospecting. Yes. I do every year, and I'm wrong. Let me say this. Yes, I'm getting together with people next month to forecast oil prices. It's fun. I once won the award for the best forecast of the year. I've been doing it for a long time. And then I won for the worst forecast of the year. So I'm batting about zero. I get oil prices every day. I'm sort of like a pig farmer who watches pork prices every day, and they come up with a different excuse every day why it changes. It's hilarious to read, but I really don't know. I mean, it's tied to how the world economy does, how our economy, how the U.S. economy does, and those kinds of things. That does not surprise me. It's 10%. It's 130 people. You know, they go through reorganizations quite a bit. Technology changes where they maybe don't need as many people. That's true in the oil fields as well. That's a funny company because it's managed by a number of other companies. And I don't think it's a reflection of what's happening on the slope right now, because I think just the reverse is happening on the slope. So I think that's more of a management internal thing. I mean, they are, you know, less oil is flowing down that pipeline, but that's been true for a while. I mean, and that's a worry. But I think it's more of a restructuring kind of thing. I mean, it's not good. Those are good jobs, but I don't think it's going to have a significant impact on us. Yes?
Might be able to shed a little light on the Alyeska situation as well. I know recently they've been upgrading a lot of pump stations, so their numbers could have been artificially inflated because of all that routine maintenance. Now they're wrapping up with that.
Yeah, and there are fewer pump stations, too, and a lot of them are automatic now, whereas at one time there used to be people at every pump station, and that certainly is not true anymore.
They centralized them.
They did. Well, they once centralized in Fairbanks, and they moved back to Anchorage, and some of that might be going on as well. Most of the people are in Anchorage, Valdez, and Fairbanks, and along the pipe, and on the slope, actually. And that included their contractors as well. All right, well, thanks. It was fun.
Oh, thank you.
It's great having him out here, and very entertaining, but very informative, too. So now we have some other visitors here. We'll have a discussion on the borough ballot measure on the election date change. And let me get my cheat sheet here. We have Ryan McKee is going to speak first on the pro side, and then I have John Strassenberg, who is going to speak on the con side. So I think we probably have 7 minutes for you, or maybe I should say, need more. Well, including questions and answers. Okay. I'm going to take just a minute, Ryan. The borough election is coming up on October 2nd. There are some very serious ballot measures that need to be looked for you to consider and vote. One on road bond, one on police powers, whether you want to tell the borough that they should continue to consider various options for looking at policing, and the third is this date change for the elections. There's literature up on the table as you came in if you want to take it home and study all the details on it. So anyway, I just want to encourage you to go vote, to first consider the information and then make your decision and be sure to vote. So, Ryan.
Well, thank you guys for having me. And as far as community councils go, this is a pretty good turnout. So we appreciate you guys being active in your community. So we had heard from a lot of people out here, and I've been born and raised out here, went to Colony and then went to UAA. And so the Valley has always been my home. And I've also seen that the attendance level for voter turnout has always been pretty low. Some quick numbers here. In 2015, the mayor's race, and that's usually the one that gets the most attention, was about 17%, roughly 11,000 people of the 65,000 registered voters turned out to vote. And again, we just reached our 100,000 mark. So this, you know, there's only 65 registered voters, but that's still, you know, the population itself is over 100,000. So participation is 17% of registered voters, but overall it's much lower of total residents here. And again, you know, the borough is the size of West Virginia, so the borough, the Mat-Su borough as a whole, has a lot of big decisions to make, and a lot of times only a handful of people are kind of keeping the elected officials on track, making sure they're spending the money responsibly. 2016 was weird. That was an off-the-year election. There was a couple assembly seats up, but marijuana was on the ballot. And you actually saw double what turned out for the mayor's race turn out to vote in that election. And so that was actually just shy of 20,000 voters and about 28% of the registered voters. Now, in the general election, when the election data, you know, fast forward, you know, about a month to the general election, and the numbers are a lot different. The total number, so each precinct, and strangely enough, the Mat-Su borough has House Districts 7 through 12. And that is the order of voter turnout, strangely enough. District 7 had the lowest percent. And in 2014, that was at 51%, and that was a Senate race. And then a presidential race, which was for 2016, was about 57%. And of total area-wide, 41,000 people turned out to vote in 2014, and just shy of 47,000 people turned out to vote in the presidential election. So when you look at these numbers, you can clearly see that people, which is not too unexpected, the general election is when people turn out to vote. And so what we looked at is why we have to have the election for the Mat-Su, the borough, the assembly, and the local elections, why we have that a month beforehand. And so we went out and we petitioned people and asked if we should move the date and just have it all on one day in one election. And a lot of people, the response was, wait, we don't do that already? And that also tells me that they probably didn't turn out to vote, because otherwise they would have known that. But a lot of people were shocked. A lot of people obviously come from the lower 48 to Alaska, and they said, we do that out there. And so we started looking at that, and we realized this would be a good time to do it, because there are some changes at the legislative level, at the borough level, that will be, need to be made. But they've got until 2020 to do it. The next year is an off-year election, so there will just be borough assembly races and whatnot. So that won't be affected. The date, if voters approve this, the date will change, but there will just be one election. And so then there's a lot of time to really work this out and make sure that it's effective. Anchorage went a different route. They went to the mail-in ballot system, and that has been an absolute nightmare. I think 50,000 people got different ballots. Multiple people got other people's ballots. And so there was a lot of issues with that. Plus, I believe about $1 million is what it costs to run an election in Anchorage. The price tag for this one was $3 million. And then they had another special election a couple months ago, and so that one added an extra cost to that. Plus, it confused the heck out of voters, because then after that, they had the primary election, and a lot of people were expecting to get a ballot in the mail because they had just gotten two of them. So we looked at not reinventing the wheel, and something that wouldn't cost the state or the city and boroughs a ton of money to implement. And again, moving the election just seemed like an easier choice, and something that, you know, people already developed habits of showing up on the general election day. That was a tradition. A lot of people, even though there's early voting, a lot of people, myself included, like to go on election day, do the civic duty and vote on that day, get the sticker and all that. And so we thought that this would be a way to really raise awareness and get more community involvement. Because again, we've got a lot of big decisions, as you can see with the road bonds that are going to go through, police powers. I mean, that alone, that is, you know, that could affect property tax rates. And so there's a lot of things that need to be addressed. And the more community involvement that we have, I feel, and a lot of other people feel, is the best way to do this. And we're just not seeing the voter turnout that with the borough elections. I mean, there's some districts, some precincts. I think, George, one of your precincts had 57 people vote for you and 59 people vote against you. So that's really, you know, for a borough the size of West Virginia, that voter turnout is abysmal. And, you know, we probably shouldn't go to mail-in ballot. The state's still coming out of a recession, so adding a price tag, especially to local governments, because they're going to be hit hard as the money from the state disappears. So we need to be looking for more productive ways to increase voter turnout without handing you guys a big price tag that goes along with it. And so with that, if there's any other questions, I'd be happy. Yeah. So in the end, you have the potential. We don't have any hard numbers yet, and the opposing side doesn't have any either. They're speculating. But what would need to happen is the state and the borough would have to get together, because there are some legislative changes right now. Right now, the borough would have, or the state would have to vote to handle the borough elections. And we've got a really great coalition of local assemblymen. We've got city councilmen and women, a few mayors, and then I believe every single one of your elected officials on the state level out here at the Valley delegation have all signed on to help make sure that this goes nice and smooth. And by 2020, when you have your first official multiple elections on one day, everything is done nice and smooth. So there is a potential to obviously save money, because it'll just be one election. But as of right now, we do need to make a couple of the changes to make sure that they're not multiple elections. So they have right now, George, what's the number, $4.5 million that they're looking at buying? And on that, there are some changes that they've raised, that there are certain chip or memory cards that need to be purchased. And that's why, again, this is the time to do it, because the state Edinburgh oftentimes spends money on stuff only to realize that it was a bad idea. I think we're still living down the ferry situation. So we're trying to really figure out now, before the state buys a bunch of machines and then all of a sudden realizes they got the wrong ones, this is the time, if they do move the election, before they purchase these machines, look at their capabilities and look at the and say, okay, let's get some that actually can handle this. Because, I mean, in the day of, this is 2018, and if you're telling me that you can't print all of the elections on a single paper, or you can't do make sure that it's just a one simple step process, that right there should be a good example of government bureaucracy getting in the way. Because that is a very easy, simple fix, and we've got people on all levels of the government, from the community councils, from the borough assembly, the city assemblies, all the way up to the state senators, and that are all saying, we're on board, we're ready to go. Not all of them. But most of them are ready to go on this and ready to fix the problem, and they've got 2 years or two full election cycles to do, or one full election cycle to do that, and then we'd fully implement it in 2020 for the big presidential election. Yes. It would be probably, again, this is speculation, but the cost would probably be split between, you know, the borough would cover some and the state would cover some, because there are two different groups, and normally, you know, that's the borough does is responsible for some of the costs. But the other thing is the election workers. Right now, I'm sure everywhere you go, you see signs asking people to sign up to be election workers. And I found this out spending a lot of time turning in signature packets at the clerk's office, that a lot of people, they had the issue that on election years like this one, where you have local and then you have popular, really big-time state elections, a lot of the election workers only choose one. They don't do both of them. And so they're right now struggling to find people to go work these elections because they do have to have two elections. They kind of realized what they were saying and stopped real quick. But if you had one election, you'd have one. And again, making it one election, not, and a lot of the complaints that we have are that, you know, there's going to be, you're going to go into a room and you're going to vote for state here, you're going to vote this here and vote that. That's not going to happen here. Our goal is to move it to just one election, and that's it.
One last question.
What's that? Well, that was the thing. You wouldn't want to. You'd want the people to come up to the show up to their precincts and vote in one election. Vote for your state level. Oh.
The poll workers.
Would you? You shouldn't need additional poll workers, because the idea is local election. There are not more people showing up for local elections than showing up for a regular. So you wouldn't actually see an influx in people showing up to the polls. People who don't vote on the general election probably aren't. That'd be one of the processes, the legislative what? Processes. But I think my time is about outside.
I don't know. I think that's probably going to cover it for one side. If we have a few minutes, we'll go back to questions at the end. So I want to get Mr. Strassenberg to come up. Yeah. So a lot of issues to be decided. Okay, thank you, Ryan. Now we have John Strassenberg from
Talkeetna.
Yeah, I'm gonna need.
I'll put it in there. Does it fit in there?
I don't think so. Does that fit in there?
No.
How am I gonna turn page?
I have no idea.
Do we have a mic that fits in that?
Oh, easy.
Very good.
Great. Okay, can everybody hear me? I guess so. Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me to come down here. And my name is John Strassenberg, and I live in Talkeetna. And I have a slightly different take on this issue than Ryan. It's actually not quite as simple as he portrayed. And this is Proposition B3, and I'll refer to it throughout here as B3. B3 would cost the taxpayer more, it would create serious logistical problems, and it would drown out our local candidates and ballot positions. Now, the state will not allow a combined election, so under B3, there would have to be two separate elections on the same day. Now, to change that is not an easy thing, and it would require a statutory change at the state level. This means that there's going to be two separate ballots and two separate elections, two separate lines to stand in, that kind of thing. It's anticipated that most polling locations would be able to accommodate two elections at the same time, but this is not assured for all the precincts. Some of the polling places right now are scarcely large enough for one election, so having two in that same location would present some problems. So in any event, there's going to be a certain amount of voter inconvenience, extra time spent at the polls, which will likely cause some voters to skip one of the ballots or the other. Right now, the borough borrows the state's voting machines for its elections. And under B3, on election day, the state will use its machines, and they will not become available to the borough until after the state is done with them. Now, that means the borough would not be able to count its ballots and announce the election results for 1 to 2 days and possibly longer. The length of the delay depends on the state, and we don't, at least I don't really know at this point whether the state will release them right after the initial count or whether they'll release the machines after the absentee and question ballots are counted. But that's something that needs to be determined, and it could be significant. So the borough has an option. They can buy all new voting machines for the precincts at great expense, or it can just live with the delay and figure out a way to secure and safeguard the ballots and transport the ballots until they can be counted and verified. Either way, it would cost the taxpayer money. Election worker recruitment is another problem. The borough now uses 195 election workers and officials, 95% of whom are shared with the borough, between the borough and the state. With the elections the same day, it wouldn't be possible to do this sharing. So there would be a fairly significant challenge to recruit and train 185 new workers. And it also is likely the borough would have to pay the workers more because it would probably have to compete with the state for these workers. The proponents of B3 say it would cost less, but that's not the case. Any way you look at it, B3 would increase cost, and those costs would be borne by the taxpayer. Proponents talk about voter turnover as a benefit. Boosting voter turnout is a good thing, and I think that the automatic voter registration that comes with a permanent fund dividend application would go a long way towards achieving that end. Also, the borough could promote absentee voting and expand the number of locations where in-person absentee voting is available. On the other hand, I don't think the rosy turnout speculations asserted by the B3 proponents are credible. We can safely conclude, I think, that odd number of years B3 would have no effect on voter turnout because there's no state or federal elections in the odd-numbered years. In the even-numbered years, when the state elections are held, it sounds plausible that voter turnout might increase at the borough level, but we don't know that. There's been no substantive analysis and no hard evidence showing that moving the borough election to November would affect voter turnout, or if so, by how much. The proponents are hanging their hat on, it sounds good, so therefore it must be true. Justification, that's not good enough. It's not good enough to justify the additional costs and convoluted logistics, confusion, and voter inconvenience that would plague our local elections. It's also not good enough to justify drowning out our local issues and candidates in the noise and flurry of the state and federal election. The reason that local elections are nonpartisan and are held separately from state and federal elections is that local issues most directly affect our day-to-day lives, and these issues deserve our full attention. I'm talking about roads, emergency services, capital projects, bonding, schools, permits, parks and trails, and so on. It is our elected officials who determine our property taxes and how these dollars are spent. If the elections were held on the same date, our local candidates and ballot propositions would be overwhelmed and I fear lost in the confusion and onslaught of advertising and media attention focused on so many candidates vying for votes in so many elections. In sum, there's significant downside to B3, and whatever benefit there might be is unsupported. That's why I oppose B3. So that's all I have to say. Wait. I was good. This man had his hand up. Oh, okay. Go ahead, George. Yeah. Nothing. I said that voter participation is a good thing. Voter participation is a good thing. And I don't know where your figures came from, and so I'd like to see them. Well, I'd like to see the figures, George. I don't. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, would be two lines, two ballots, because the state statute prohibits combining elections. So that's what it would be. You say that again. Right. That's why you should vote no on B3. Yeah, I'd like to see what happens with the permanent fund registration, because now when people apply for a permanent fund, there's automatic voter registration. I'd like to see what effect that has on voter turnout.
We thought that too when we were gathering.
signatures. We were like, okay, we'll just ask if they signed up for the PFD, and then the clerk said, oh, yeah. No, most of those people aren't registered yet.
Yeah.
Some miscommunication between the two groups.
Okay. Well, the borough could do some more as well. And, I mean, they really could push at in-person absentee. They could have it at more locations than just Talkeetna, Houston, and Trapper Creek and down here. Oop. Yeah, this, you had your
own. I'd like to say is that most of these voter-sponsored initiatives, so to speak, are asking for changes in state law, and that's why we elect legislators to change state law. So these should be advisory votes, not votes that require something. We looked and saw what happened in the cruise ship industry. We were trying to see what's trying to happen in the mining industry. These should be advisory votes, and because they should be advisory votes, we should vote no, so that the legislature can take a look at these things and make the change that they could.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and I think it's important to be informed, and I think it's important to have the information that we need before plunging into this.
Yeah, I think the con side has finished their 10, but we can still have a little bit of back and forth on questions, so, but it's for everybody now. That's what he's saying. Let's not point fingers at people. No, we're going to have the man in the back now. Go ahead. Never.
Yeah, that's incorrect. One of the states. He's wrong.
Disagreement that that would require a state change. I'm not trying to argue with anybody, but I think that that is still a question. Last question. Yeah. Comment. All right, we got another pro
May I please respond to that? I read the Frontiersman article that was published July 9th, and one of the statements in there was, I think it was referring to the flyer that you guys distributed. was one election cost less than two. That was incorrect as far as that. The implication is it would be one election. That's misleading the public when you say something like that. And yes, it is. It's two, well, yes, including two, the borough is where I got the information for two elections, two lines, two ballots, state statute.
All right. I want to encourage everybody to
Thank
go read up.
Thank you very much for having me.
Read up as much as you can, because it is obviously a very complex issue. Thank you very much, John. Thank you very much, Ryan.